Hello and welcome to another episode of the Stephen Reid Podcast. On today's episode we have Shiva and we talk about the East, our fears and an awful lot of cricket. Shiva.
Hi Stephen.
So for those of you who don't know, this I believe is the 12th episode. No, I may stand corrected, but we've got a brand new guest on tonight. We've got Shiva Karthikeyan. His surname is a hell of a mouthful, but it's worth it.
It's a pleasure to be on, mate.
It's a long time coming, I think. Yeah. We've been doing this podcast for a while now and it's good to have you finally with us. This is actually the first podcast recorded on a boat. Not ever, probably. I'm sure they've recorded other podcasts on a boat. This is the first time we've recorded it on a boat. Yeah. But why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit?
So my name's Shiva, as Stephen kindly told you guys. Been friends with these guys since secondary school. Just graduated from uni this summer. I did mechanical engineering. And I'm in the process of looking for jobs, so that's like a glamorous way of saying I'm unemployed, basically. But yeah,
I
don't really like talking about my side hustle.
Okay, we'll leave the side hustle.
I'll pretend like
because we'll keep you all mysterious.
Yeah,
they'll be wondering what does Shiva do, and then they'll end up googling you and see on Wikipedia.
Oh yeah, true.
You do have a Wikipedia profile.
Well,
right?
Yeah, because I'm so high up in that.
In the thing
establishment,
that you do.
Yeah. Quite a big deal, but I like to keep it under wraps. I don't want people knowing.
Okay. I might just say actually that is probably like the best introduction we've had. To I think we've only asked people to introduce themselves once or twice, but that was the best out of the once or twice that it's been
Thank
done.
You.
It's quite a hard thing to talk about yourself like that. So.
Interview practice.
We're recording this right around sort of the beginning of November. So quite topical, I thought, is with us just passing Halloween, I want to ask you, what is the scariest thing you've ever done or seen?
Scariest thing. That's a tough one. Well, I guess the things that jump out at me are like kind of jump scares that will happen to me. I don't think I get scared that easily. And I'm not like all ghosts and kind of monsters.
Do you believe
in
ghosts?
I don't believe in any of that.
Okay. Like.
So well, I see like someone get scared by that or I see a video of it, it's not going to scare me. If there's like a jump scare, that will obviously like I'll be scared for that like moment. But then, you know, I'll forget about it kind of thing.
Yeah. I've watched quite a few scary movies.
Yeah.
And somehow turns into a bit of an addiction.
Oh, really?
Which is a bit strange considering how terrifying some of them are.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you got watched any,
so
any
I,
horror films.
My opinion of horror movies are I don't like the concept of watching a film just to get scared. I think it sacrifices a good plot and good dialogue, which are kind of things I kind of look for more in films. That does make it sound like I get scared and I'm too scared to watch them, but I'm not going to put myself through it. Like, I'll be on edge the entire time, like, oh, when's the next jump scare?
Yeah, just to be scared.
And then when I look back on the film, it's like, well, that was pretty... When you look at it, the bare bones of the film,
it's
not great.
There are there's a lot of scary films that are just terrible.
Yeah.
Have you watched The Hostel before?
No.
I watched that with a mate at uni who loves this kind of like zombie.
Yeah.
He loves all this horror films and zombie type genre, and it was terrible. It was honestly probably the worst film I've ever watched.
Yeah.
And I try and avoid bad films, like you say, because They do take up a good, you know, 2-3 hours of your time. That's sometimes. That's true. And, you know, if they're terrible, you've completely wasted.
Waste your time, yeah.
But it's an interesting point you raised, though, because I do like horror films, even if they have got bad plots.
Okay.
However, I have the same opinion about sad films.
Oh, okay.
I think that I don't watch sad films. It, you know, if I know they're going to make me cry,
oh, okay.
because I know what emotion I'm going to feel, and I don't want to feel that, I just don't end up watching those films at all.
Yeah. I think I'm actually kind of the opposite, or at least I've been in a phase of film watching where I would actually like, I enjoyed watching sad films because it, I don't know, I just, it's a different kind of ending to what you normally get in a lot of films, and it was kind of...
It's not the happily ever after.
No, yeah. Thing. And I felt like I empathised with it some in a weird way. Mm. Not like any of those things in those films ever happened to me, but... Because I don't cry at films. I think like the last time I cried must have been in school or something. So maybe just watching a film that makes me feel upset, kind of like, I don't really normally feel like this.
Yeah.
It might be like just my brain's thinking, oh, that's a new thing, like you enjoy that.
I suppose it's probably more impressive for a film to be able to make you feel sad than to purely make you feel scared.
Yeah.
Because I suppose fear is more like, it's a more natural instinct rather than like being sad is
That's true, actually.
A bit more of like an emotion that you've got to, as you say, like empathize with the characters and actually get into the plot and the, you know, you've got to feel connected to them in some way, I suppose. That's an interesting point. Yeah. Have you ever cried at a film?
No.
Never?
Not at all. No, I just, I don't know. Like, I've definitely been like very close. Like my eyes were like kind of welling up. I'm like, oh wow, this is really deep, or like this is a lot to take in. But I've never full on like tears.
Okay,
coming out.
I think there's only been one film that's made me cry, and that was I Am Legend.
So I haven't watched that. I've heard it makes
it's
people cry.
Really sad at the end, and I won't spoil the ending for those who know it. But because I watched it when I was a bit younger as well. The first time I had to actually stop watching it.
Oh, really?
I couldn't finish the rest of the film because I was too upset. But I braved it for the second one, and I still cried again.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I managed to make it all the way through, and it's genuinely an amazing film. Really good.
Oh,
but I don't think because I know how upsetting it is to me. I don't think I'd probably ever watch it again.
Yeah.
It's just strange because, as I say, like it is. It's weird to think that something can make you so upset, but you can also be think it's so amazing that it does that. I actually read a book this year, and I didn't just read a book, but this was the first book that made me cry.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I was amazed afterwards because I thought, you know, it's one thing actually seeing characters on the screen being upset and relating to them, but actually to get so engrossed in a story that it made me cry.
Yeah.
It was a really strange experience, but it was probably easier to do so on this particular book because it was based, it was a true story. It was written by a surgeon who was dying essentially, but him and his wife had a kid. And it was about like it was written by him in sort of the last days or, you know, weeks. And it was really hard to read, but really interesting and like so deeply upsetting. But it's been a bit of a roller coaster.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. What have you read any books this year?
No. Haven't read like a book. So I also read like textbooks and things like that at uni, but I haven't read a book since school, sixth form, maybe before. Like honestly, it's been so long. I just haven't read a book. I do want to get back into reading, but there's this I have this thing where I don't want to read a book, and then I get like 50 pages in, I'm like, well, this isn't interesting me.
Yeah.
Why have I wasted? It's same with the films,
right?
Don't
invest in it.
I don't want to read a book and not be interested in it, and then have to look for another book.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, I think the best way, I should really start reading, because it is really good for, like, just in general. It will stop me being on my phone all the time. It makes you a smarter person, right? Like, just,
I hope so.
Well, I think it almost certainly does, because it like keeps your brain active rather than like just looking at a screen or doing nothing, mundane. Yeah, you're reading. You might learn a new word. That's immediately something you learn, or like sentence structure, things like small things you don't really pick up on immediately, but it definitely helps. And also, to you saying you cried to a book, that's kind of incredible. Like, someone's written something, it's just words, and it's managed to get such an emotion out of you. Definitely. It's pretty incredible, isn't it? Like, you'd almost think you'd have to see it, right? But someone's written something, it's painted a picture in your head.
Mm.
It's made you feel that emotion. It's pretty crazy.
I have felt, on the complete flip side of that, I have also probably for the first time this year or last year laughed out loud from reading a book, which is also a really strange experience because everyone around you has no idea what's going on when you start laughing. I think it was on a plane as well, so it was even more like outlandish. But it was, it's definitely been a bit of an aim of mine to read more, because I know how much I enjoy it, but like you say, it's really hard getting away from the phones. And and for a long time I didn't read because I was so slow at reading, and it's like a vicious cycle, because you're slow at reading, you don't read, and then because you're not reading, you're not going to get any faster.
You
must have read a lot of like textbooks and stuff then with your course. No
so I'm going to, people aspiring to go to uni, textbooks.
Don't do it. No, I'm joking.
Textbooks are a lie. Everything you ever need is on the internet. Basically, on my course, you get set like questions for coursework and things, and it turns out they'd be from old like textbooks, and you just find the answers online on PDFs. So you didn't really need a textbook.
And there are ebooks as well now, which make life so much easier.
Yeah, I can see why people don't like ebooks, because it must be quite nice holding onto like a proper book. Like, that feeling of the pages running through your fingers would be nice. But yeah,
I'm reading a hardback book at the moment, which is particularly nice,
satisfying. Yeah,
yeah. Anyway, what was the best thing about your course then?
Definitely like, being able to, the very few occasions we were allowed to, we could like design and make things and do projects. Those were cool. So second year, I made a 3D printer, me and some of the people, we made a 3D printer, which is, that's pretty cool.
That is amazing. And did it work?
Yeah, it did work. Yeah. Yeah. What? So it, admittedly, it's not as impressive as it sounds. It was kind of like a 3D printer kind of kit, so we just had to assemble it, and then we were allowed to modify it to make it better. So we put like a heated bed on it, basically, so the table or the thing that you extrude the plastic onto, it's already a bit hot, and so it doesn't like morph when it's cools.
Okay.
So it was meant to like improve the structure of whatever you're printing. Engineering awesome. Stuff. Yeah.
I actually saw, not that long ago, I saw they've started experimenting with 3D printing buildings.
Oh, really?
They have obviously a massive 3D printer, and it's filled with cement or some kind of building material.
Yeah,
and they program it in and have almost like a modular system as well. I think, and they just go around in layers and print this cement into the ground, and then once they've got the structure, they can then just build around it. But it's so quick as well.
The
video I saw of it was just rapid. It built this house in like an hour or so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was nuts. Maybe I got the wrong picture because it was sped up, but it was still a lot quicker than manpower of just building.
It's very true. Like that. Well, I think a lot of things are a lot of companies use 3D printers to make their products, because you can 3D print screws and bolts and things. Yeah,
like
you
metal.
You can 3D print metal. Wow. It's obviously more expensive, but yeah, you can. Because as long as I assume it's supposed to do with melting points, you just need the correct nozzle to do that, and then yeah, you can 3D print parts to. So I know in fourth year, lots of the groups that in we did like a group project. I'm sure lots of them used the metal 3D print. Oh yeah, my housemate used it because they were making like some rocket thing.
Wow.
Yeah, and so awesome. They 3D printed some parts out of metal, and yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I did hear of someone of like people getting their hands on 3D printers and printing like bits of guns and stuff. So I suppose this. You do probably have a few limitations to it in the way that people can literally print whatever they want, right?
Yeah, that's true. If you have like, if you have your own 3D printer, then yeah.
Are they expensive to have?
Yeah, like one that can print metal definitely will be expensive. I'm not really sure how much, but I know the plastic one that we made in second year was like $500. So that's not too bad.
That's fairly affordable,
but
I suppose.
It is just...
For if yeah. you wanted to invest in yeah, that kind of thing.
It's true. But you would... If you were going to make something properly out of it, rather than just a hobby, you would want like a top-of-the-range one that's like really accurate. And because we had like a lot of calibration issues and things like that.
That's cool. Yeah. And what about the... you told me a little bit about your... I think it was your third or fourth year project... Something to do with the bike.
Oh yeah,
I remember. Yeah. It, but I remember it was cool.
Yeah, it was my fourth year project was to make ABS for a bicycle. So me and seven other people. ABS is anti-lock braking system. So you have it in cars, but we wanted to make one for a push bike, just a normal standard bicycle. And yeah, we used like a linear actuator, and we linked that up to the existing brake line, and yeah, we managed to get it working, kind of. We like proved the concept, but it was quite difficult to actually. We were leaking oil like the entire time, right. So we were losing brake pressure.
So in theory, it could work.
Definitely, in theory, we proved like it definitely can work. Would you really want it? No, unless we like. The issue we had was the. Actuator we needed was like so big and bulky, and we needed this massive valve that weighed like half a kilogram or something. And like, if you're adding half
a
kilogram
to a bike,
our entire system was ended up being like 1.5 kilograms. So if you're adding 1.5 kilograms to a bike that weighs what, maybe 3 kilograms top, you're like adding 50% of the weight to it. It's not really desirable, but
no, not at all.
If technology improves in time, then yeah, maybe. I mean, e-bikes have them though. So,
electric
like pedal kind of normal bike. They have a lot of them have ABS built into them. So, it's definitely potential. Although we probably won't be cycling around on normal bikes in the future.
No.
We're like technology's like kind of. If we've already got e-bikes, who knows what we're gonna have next? You know.
I mean, isn't e-bike really that different from a moped or a motorbike? He's having a sip of tea.
Yeah.
How is the tea, by the way?
It's good. It's well good. Oh, great.
I'm
tea,
glad.
Courtesy of Stephen Reed.
Yeah, well...
So e-bike is just like an electric motor, whereas a moped's like, it's got an engine, right?
Okay.
And like you could, I assume you charge.
And it's obviously got some kind of fuel as well. Then.
Yeah, it's got like maybe got a dynamo or something that you charge when you pedal. So it's like constantly charging itself.
I want to go back to the future bit that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Because do you have any predictions for the future based on things you saw on your course or things you learned about like new technologies that are coming through? Any mind-blowing facts or thoughts? Are we going to be using hover cars or flying machines?
Flying machines, maybe. Like drones are definitely a kind of thing that, not even from my course, but I just, being used a lot more. Like, aren't Amazon Prime? I don't know if this was a joke or something.
I know they Amazon Prime are going
to
use
like
they?
Yeah, use drones to like deliver. That's pretty mad.
I don't know if that's actually happened though. Anywhere?
No, mate, probably not.
I can see a lot of issues. Haven't had a parcel delivered by a drone yet.
I don't think they would start with Thatcham. No. Out of all the places.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah. I personally, if I was thinking of the future, this is going to sound a bit like a party pooper, but definitely like the whole global warming thing is the big issue. Okay. And
we might not even make it to the
future.
Yeah,
honestly, I mean, they say like, well, in 2050, like a lot of land that exists now will be covered in, will be taken over by water. I mean, what? We can't really, if we've got to deal with that, then we can't start making hover cars or whatever, you know?
That's got to be our main priority, surely.
But I feel like we're maybe past the point of return. I'd like to be proven wrong. You know, Donald Trump says stuff like, oh, it's probably saying it's fake news or whatever. Mm. I'd love for him to prove me wrong, but I don't think it's a, that's a thing, unfortunately.
It's pretty scary when big politicians like that are sort of, they don't believe in global warming and whatnot. It's a bit, I don't know, maybe it's a conspiracy that we're all hooked up to, but I don't know. I'm similar to you though. I feel a bit pessimistic, which is a shame really about the future, but I think in that sense you could probably go one or two ways. You could probably then be even more motivated to do something about it, or you could probably be a bit defeatist and just accept that that's just the way it is, and you know it's probably not going to be the end of the world within our lifetime, so screw it, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, how do you feel about that situation?
So what you just said there, I feel like that's exactly what maybe our parents, not specifically our parents, but our parents and their generation, they probably said, oh, it's not going to affect us, so it doesn't matter. And if we say that, then it'll be our children or their children they get affected by it. I think it will take a lot of advance in technology, because I took a lot of like sustainable energy kind of modules at uni, especially in fourth year, and like the technology is quite impressive that we have right now, but we're like nowhere near being at the point where we can rely on renewable energy.
Are we not?
No, we're not even close.
Because my feeling was always that we had the technology there, but we just weren't utilising it. We were opting for non-renewable sources of energy for a long time.
Renewable energies are very inefficient. So renewable energy sources aren't very efficient. Non-renewable ones can be quite efficient. You can make them more efficient. But with renewable energies, they often have like a limit of how efficient you can be. So like solar cells, like your bog standard solar cell, it can only get up to, if it's like super efficient, like 30%, right? But that's like a huge, bulky, kind of really expensive solar cell. And then if you make a really thin, lightweight, cheap one, at most you're getting 13%. But then even then, that's like really complicated. Like
13% efficiency.
13% efficiency, yeah.
Okay, that's not a lot, really.
No, it's not. And
however, though, I would like to point out that we are sat on a boat that's
true.
Probably at the moment 90% fueled by solar for electricity. That is not. It runs on diesel, and I mean, I suppose the way that it's working at the moment is I'm quite conscious of how I consume electricity. So I've definitely cut down on my consumption by quite a lot. So that probably allows me to use solar or rely on solar. But there are, I've heard of a boat that's purely powered by solar.
Oh, really?
It's just covered in loads of solar panels. Fair.
That's pretty
and
cool.
And so it like even drives on solar. But then you're probably quite limited in the winter when there's not much sun about.
Did the solar panels come with your boat?
Yeah, it's got one solar panel on the roof at the moment, and it's all right. But as I say, I've had to cut back quite a lot on how much energy I'm using. But I'm going to invest next year in getting a few more solar panels, because I think from what I've heard, they're a really worthy investment, because obviously they can be quite expensive to start with, but you end up saving money in the long run, and it's definitely better for the environment than guzzling a load of diesel. So
100%.
I think it's worthwhile, and I'm quite passionate about being sustainable and eco-friendly and whatnot, so I think it's an important thing for me to do. And it's important for our generation, like you say, and I'm quite positive that our generation are quite motivated with it all in the main, I'd say. Would you agree?
Maybe. I think it depends who you surround yourself with. I think certain people probably... I mean, it's not my place to tell them what they should be focused on or whatever, but they're probably not as aware of the issues. You know, they're kind of... I mean, I've just said all that stuff, but I haven't really done a whole lot to kind of change it or whatever. I'm not a vegan. I'm like Steven.
That word gets triumphs. Like a remarkable amount of times, even. Yeah. But that's not a problem. I am a vegan, for those who didn't know, which is no one.
Well, so, no, you could have new listeners.
Can you? I doubt it.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, why wouldn't considering you have new the whole everyone listens to this podcast, like we were saying, I'm basically famous already.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
For offers.
That's true.
Yeah. The only reason we don't advertise on this podcast is because I don't need to.
Mm. It would be unfair on other podcasts to advertise. Yeah, exactly.
I'd just be draining all of their resources.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, but I do have to bat away about 50 demands for adverts on the podcast on a daily basis. Yeah.
And the fangirls, they must get to you.
Oh, mate. God I live in the middle of nowhere on a boat, because otherwise, they would be knocking at my door every 2 minutes.
They would. Lying about 2 minutes. Waiting for art autographs and things like that.
Could you ever be famous?
No. Not like Kim Kardashian level, or like, was he, Leonardo DiCaprio, that kind of, no way. Could not be that famous.
When you ask that to most people, I assume most people probably say that they couldn't.
Yeah.
But it's amazing that these people have managed to stay in their lives with that amount of pressure and... like attention on them.
Stay like reasonably sane as well. Like, I could not deal with. Could you imagine like walking outside, going to the shops, and then you can't even do that because you get swarmed by fans or just paparazzi or things like that? It's like, no.
You just get hounded all the time. Yeah, it would be pretty horrific.
There's like one of the most famous Indian cricketers. He's just recently retired, like 5 to 7 years ago. He's called Sachin Tendulkar, and he was like, Indians loved him because he was like the saviour of Indian cricket. He was amazing, like broke all the records. And he said, if he wants to go out to the shops, he has to put a disguise on, because in India, like, cricket is everything. So they were like fanatic, and like they love this guy to death, but they were like so obsessive about it. And they would like, if they saw him, they would go mental, and like, there's like a lot of elder respect culture out there, and basically everyone respects him because he was such an amazing cricketer. And so I have no idea how he managed to deal with it, because it must have been so difficult. But yeah, definitely. So like having to wear a disguise, like,
I could never imagine wearing a disguise when you leave the house. That's just, just crazy, isn't it? It's scary how extreme that is, really, that you can't even go out looking like yourself because of risk of getting caught or seen by everyone. Must be fairly similar if you're on the run from doing a crime or something, though, as well. You must you must go out like really be really anxious or you know, on edge every time you go, like, step outside your house,
looking for every security camera or whatever covering your face.
Definitely. Life, you know, it's not when you think about things like that, it's not until you think about things like that you realise how lucky we are that you can just live a fairly normal, bog-standard life.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And also, we're not, massively impoverished or, like...
No.
...really bad off or something, or, like, even... maybe a lot of people we know, they've had like family struggles or like personal struggles. I know for me, I haven't had that kind of any of those issues, which I am very grateful for. And it's kind of, you don't even really think about it, really. You think, oh, that's just a, you assume that should just be a normal thing. Mm. But for a lot of people, it isn't, unfortunately.
No, we're probably in a, well, we definitely are in a minority, really, in terms of, you know, comfort levels because of the area of the world we're born into and the area of the country as well, I suppose. We are quite lucky in a sense that we have also a very diverse friendship group, I think. Yeah. Although no one's really like had a great deal of hardship, it's still, I feel like we are quite an open friendship group. And
definitely,
you know, I think that definitely broadens your horizons and makes you more of an accepting and open-minded individual.
Definitely.
Going back to India, because this is part of your roots.
No,
right?
It's not.
It is. It is, isn't it?
I was born in Pakistan.
Were you actually?
No, I wasn't. I was born in Portsmouth.
No, but where are you really from, mate? That's what they say, isn't it?
Well, you know, I'm related to Mo Salah.
Yeah.
From Egypt.
We did once have someone in a pub come up and say to Shiva that he looks like Mo Salah, who's from obviously a completely different part of the world.
Yeah.
But that was pretty funny.
It was. That geezer was pretty. He was a bit abeved.
Yeah, he didn't even care though, did he?
No.
He was like, oh, did I say something I shouldn't?
Yeah. But completely oblivious, but yeah, fair play to him.
Bless him.
It was funny, so I'll allow it.
You've been to India a fair few times, I assume.
Have.
I've never been to India, so I want a bit of an education now. Like, what is India like at its heart? You know, what's... Because you're obviously... The only thing I know about India is just from what I've seen.
Yeah.
From pictures and TV.
I have quite a... like warped perception of India because I've only ever been to Southeast India where my parents live. So my parents live in Chennai, or that's where my dad lives, and my mum's family lives a little bit north, but still in Southeast India. Mm. And so basically every time I would go and I would spend 3 weeks at my dad's mum's house and 3 weeks at my mum's parents' house. And I wouldn't really, we just go around seeing family because most of my family's in India. And so we would only really have time to see relatives. We wouldn't go out and, I was in India, there almost certainly is like loads of beautiful places you can see. But I saw the same things over and over again. And I'd be like, oh, it's getting a bit repetitive. Yeah. It's getting boring. Yeah. It is a nice place. The cult is culturally so different. Like there's a lot of, there's a lot more respect shown. So you respect your elders a lot more. I know you respect your elders here, or some people do, but out there, if someone's older than you, you show them respect and like you give them the respect they deserve normally.
How, this may sound like a stupid question, but how do people show that respect?
So you'll...
Rather, other than just
if you see someone older
polite.
Than you, you'll call them like, sir. Well, okay, I wouldn't. Because I didn't care. But I would often see people saying like they'll call someone sir, especially if they're older than them, and you listen to their opinion. They're less opinionated. That's what. So I noticed with my parents, they're much more like I'm trying to think of the word. I kind of do things more off. I form more of my own opinions, whereas my parents are definitely more like structured, and they're just
accepting of,
not even, it's more like they have like a set structure of things that they do, and it's served them well in life so far, so they keep doing it and it continues to like serve them well.
Yeah.
Whereas here it's a bit more kind of, you could change up. A lot of people change up, do what they want. If I think of the word, I'll definitely.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll bring it'll come it up. To at some point. I'm quite interested in Eastern culture.
Yeah.
Particularly places like Thailand, China, you know, and Tibet, and like the whole Buddhist or Taoist or that kind of philosophy and those religions, because I think there's so much knowledge and you know, amazing thought that there has come out of that side of the world. I'm always looking for ways that we can try and bring those philosophies into the West, but unfortunately it's very much going the opposite way. Yeah. Like the East is very much being influenced by the West.
That's very true, yeah.
When I feel like it could be the other way. So is there anything in it from an Indian culture which you think would make Britain a better place to be?
I think there's more of like a kind of community family aspect in Indian culture. So at least from my parents, they would say them and their neighbours, they would often like, you would walk into their house kind of, well, okay, you wouldn't like go in unannounced, but like everyone was welcome whenever they want. Mm. You would do things together all the time. You'd bring them gifts and things like that. I think that kind of sense of community is maybe not as big here. Kind of here, well, at least from my experience,
yeah,
you ask your neighbours, you only like, you knock on your neighbour, you're going on holiday for 2 weeks, you're asking, oh yeah, can you take the bins out for us or whatever. But you won't go in and, like, you know, you made some cookies or whatever, you won't go in and give them to them. I mean, some people probably do, but I think most people don't. I think in India, it's a much more common thing to occur.
Okay. I would agree about the state of community in this country, because I feel everyone, as soon as they get home from work or school, especially in the autumn and winter time, end up, you know, you just close curtains, lock the door, put the heating on, TV goes on, and you cook dinner and that's it. And you don't engage with the other people on your street very much. And I've already noticed a huge difference being part of the canal system and the boating community, the difference in the respect and community feeling here is huge. Because even before I bought a boat, I had loads of people saying, oh, you know, if you've got any questions, just ask, or, you know, here's my number, just like drop us a message if you're wondering. And actually, I'm living next to friends on a boat now, but even so, they, you know, they've been massively helpful to me, and they ran out of water the other week, so they came and borrowed some of my water, and I ran out of coal and I went and borrowed some of theirs. And even tonight I was cooking dinner for us all and ran out of gas. Well, my gas bottle was empty and the cooking stopped, came to a halt, and I've never changed a gas bottle before. So I gave it a good go, but I clearly had no clue what I was doing. Mm. So I went and asked them, and it's so refreshing to be part of something like that, because for the majority of my life I've lived next to neighbours that we either didn't talk to or actively didn't like, because they weren't very friendly or helpful neighbours. In fact, there's one neighbour whose fence kept falling down, and it nearly fell down on top of me, in fact, and that they flat out refused to do anything about it, and it had fallen into our garden, and we ended up paying for a new fence and whatnot. So we, for a long time, we didn't, you know, my parents and them didn't get on for quite a while. However, fairly recently we had a new, like a younger chap moving next door, and that opened my eyes to actually what a nice neighbour is like, because he invited us round for a barbecue, we invited him round for some drinks, and, you know, he's helped me out a ton already with other stuff too. So it's really refreshing. It's nice to be part of that. Other than our friendship group then, are there any communities that you are part of in the UK, I guess?
So I used to be, when I played cricket, I was part of like a cricket community. I had my uni friends, I guess you could call that a community. I don't really know. Apart at the moment, no, because I'm almost always in Thatcham. But
well, what's the cricket community like?
It's normally quite a mix of people, but they're all normally pretty good guys. Like to have a bit of booze. Like to talk about cricket. So that's always good fun.
That's fairly standard, I imagine.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a bit of a boring sport. So, you know, some people
it does have a name for being probably one of the most boring sports.
All right. All right, mate.
Change my mind.
Well, golf. That's boring.
Yeah, but you can't change my mind by telling me.
No, you said it was the most boring sport. Okay. I see. I give you one.
True. Yeah, I stand corrected. Stand corrected. Sorry. Well, tell me. We'll go back to the cricket community, but while we're on it, I want you to change my mind why cricket's not a boring sport.
How many cricket games have you watched?
One.
When was that?
This year.
What kind of a cricket game was it?
I think it was 2020.
Okay, so you probably watched the most exciting version of
I would say that my opinion of cricket has changed a little bit after watching that.
Yeah.
But for those out there who don't watch cricket and do think it's the most boring sport, why isn't it? What's the excitement?
I think you need to have some kind of grasp of the rules. I think with anything, right? If you don't know what's going on, you're not going to enjoy it. But in terms of like the atmosphere, like me, Will, and Matt went to a cricket game, and that was England versus India. So that's normally always really big game, even in England, because there's a lot of Indian people here in England who have emigrated here. So that was quite a good game because it was a good atmosphere, good buzz going around, rivalry. Yeah, and a lot of the Indians aren't afraid to pipe up, even though they were probably getting beaten where they were. But yeah, so that kind of atmosphere, I think, is really good. And yeah, it can be really exciting if you watch a good game. Obviously, I think it's the same with a lot of sports. You can watch a football game, right? And it could be 0-0,
oh, yeah,
zero shots.
I've
it could be really
watched
boring,
some
right?
incredibly boring football games. Definitely.
So I think it is about going to the right game. I think a lot of people get confused. A lot of people get confused with the rules in cricket. There's a lot of things going on. There are a lot of numbers.
William Lane, can you pass me your cushion, please, William Lane? My bum is getting numb on this seat. Thanks. Sorry, Shiva.
Seam was aggressively pointing to Will.
Aggressively. And he had no idea what I was
doing. I don't blame him, to be fair. I didn't have any idea either.
He had a blank face.
Yeah. I think the rules of... Okay, cricket can be quite confusing because there's a lot of things going on and there are a lot of numbers. In football, it's really the basic concepts is really easy.
The ball goes in
the goal. You put it in the other team's goal, not your own one. In cricket, it's like there are wickets, there's a ball, there's a bat.
Yeah.
There's one team has 11 people on the field and the other team has two. There's all these things that are kind of making it confusing, which I think also in England, football is a national sport, right? Mm-hmm. So people from a young age learn about football and they give it a chance. So you ask most schoolboys, they know what the offside rule is, right? Which is probably equally as complicated as explaining the rules of cricket. Even though it's really obvious for us, a lot of people struggle with the offside rule.
Yeah.
But in India, if you asked a school kid, they would know all the rules of cricket, but they might struggle with the offside rule. Okay. So I think it's probably that you don't grow up with cricket in most households. I grew up with it because my dad loved it and he used to play it all the time as a kid. And especially in India, if you had any free time, you'd go play cricket. There was literally nothing else that you could. It's not like there wasn't anything else to do. There wasn't any logical option because why would you not play cricket? It was ingrained into your mind. Just go play some cricket. And there's like stories in like Mumbai. There'll be like this big field and you'll have like 20 different games going on at once. And apparently there'll be like set umpires, and umpires will give wickets or give someone out for a ball for a different batsman. They won't even know what's going on. They'll just be giving people out. It's like that many people are playing out there. And it's like same kind of, if you go to a park, there'll be like 5 or 6 football games going on, kind of thing. So I think that's a big reason why.
Okay. That's awesome. I didn't know really any of that. But there is another sport that you enjoy, I believe, that I also think is incredibly boring. And I want you to change my mind about this one too, because Formula One. Did you know I was going to say Formula One?
I've eventually figured it out.
I have also tried Formula One, and I believe it's even more boring than golf and cricket combined.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't get it at all.
I think that's harder to explain. I enjoyed it. I think initially, so I enjoyed it because Vodafone sponsored Ferrari, and I like cars, and my dad worked at Vodafone, so I was like, oh, that's amazing. And Ferrari used to do well, so I was like, well, this is an amazing sport. My team is winning everything.
Yeah.
What's not to love about that? Then as I got older and I knew I wanted to do engineering, I was like, oh, it's actually pretty cool. Like, you know, all those things I didn't notice about on the wing, on the rear wing, how like the car's shaped, that has actually been deliberately done to make it more aerodynamic, increase the downforce, or maybe decrease the downforce, because some races have a lot of long straights, so you want really high speed, top speed, but so you sacrifice downforce. That's kind of thing, when I was younger, I wouldn't know, but it was cool knowing that. So there is like some kind of strategy to it as well. But now, yeah, I can see why people don't like it. It is just cars driving around. I don't really watch it anymore, but that is also because Ferrari keep losing. So
maybe one day when they
start improving. It's good fun. Another reason why I probably don't watch it is like, I know I'll never ever be able to work on a F1 car, realistically, because it's so difficult to get a job as an engineer.
I imagine it's probably really niche, I guess, is it?
Not even that. I think a lot of mechanical engineers probably go into engineering thinking, right, I want to be an F1 engineer, but so few actually make it, because they only hire the best of the best, right?
Okay,
don't want... You have to get, like... You have to have had a lot of experience in, like, Formula Student and things like that. I can't give you a good reason why you should enjoy Formula One, to be honest.
Okay, fair enough.
That is like,
fair enough. Well, I won't feel so bad then about not liking Formula One.
But you have to like cricket. It has to become your favourite sport.
I definitely give cricket more of a go. And I'll admit, I used to enjoy playing cricket when I was
really?
A kid. And that was because my grandparent, well, my gran in particular, was a PE teacher, and she used to teach cricket at school, and she particularly enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I think she was part of the cricket team when she was younger too.
Oh, nice.
Because cricket used to be a big sport for the UK and Britain.
Oh, yeah, like originated
England,
in England, yeah.
In the past, right?
Yeah.
So it's fairly strange now that it's changed completely, and it's...
Because
England introduced cricket to India. Am I all right?
Yeah, I assume it was when the British Empire
went
stomping around.
Yeah, I thought so. I was going to say something then.
I think the English just got jealous that the Indians were so much better at it. That
they reckon?
Like, no, we don't play
That's
cricket
That's probably
anymore.
Quite a controversial thought.
Yeah, I know. Well, because it's true.
Never mind. I remember what I was going to say. You mentioned that Formula One, like mechanical engineering, is like the top of the top, and a lot of people go into it for that. It's similar in this with physiotherapy, in the sense that actually a lot of people go into physiotherapy wanting to be sports physios.
Yeah.
And I think because a lot of people actually hear about physios first from seeing football physios, you know, running onto the pitch, and a lot of people get into it for that.
Mm-hmm.
When the reality is that's a really, really small minority, and it is only some of the best physios in the country are working with elite sport. So you end up then going in. A lot of people actually then find all the other aspects of physiotherapy that they think are interesting and want to go into, and then they'll do that instead. But I suppose there's probably an aspect of that in most professions. There's probably something that gets people's attention and think, oh, that's amazing. Reality is, it's quite difficult to get there.
So, imagine how many lawyers, they watch like some law series, like, oh, that looks amazing, I'd love to do that, and they become a lawyer because of that. But you probably only end up, you do like admin stuff in the end. You don't, or it's not as it seems, kind of thing. I agree.
I never thought I would be doing half as much admin and sitting down as I am as a physio. I thought there would be a lot more like walking around and at least being on wards and, you know, doing physical stuff. But actually, I think behind the scenes in most jobs, there's an awful lot of that going on, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Which is bad, really, because, you know, the whole aspect of physiotherapy is about, you know, movement and preventing injury, and it's about posture and stuff like that. And actually, we spend an awful lot of time sat on our bums in bad posture or sitting over a computer or something.
Yeah, it's true.
It's a shame, but hey, what can you do?
It's just one of those unavoidable things in life. You're going to have to do admin stuff regardless.
Definitely.
It's a bit unfortunate, but
I wanna, guess you have to. I want to almost go in a bit of a circle here, and I want to ask a fairly deep question, but what's your biggest fear? What do you have any?
We're going in. Yeah. My biggest fear is living a life with regrets. Kind of, oh, I wish I did something, or like thinking back on specific moments and being like, how much better would my life have been if I had taken this choice instead of the choice I did, or did a different thing, you know.
Have there been any opportunities you've taken specifically because of that mentality?
Not that I can really think of, but probably has been, maybe like subconsciously, because it's like, it's something that I've thought about for a while, you know. I don't like, every time I make a decision, I don't go and think, oh, will I regret this later on in my life? So I've probably, when I've been umming and ahhing and I've been tipped over the edge to, oh yeah, why not I just do it?
Probably more of a mindset than in that sense. Like you say, it's probably not so much of a conscious thing.
But definitely.
I definitely shared that with you because I feel like in work, I'm constantly reminded how about the terrible things that could happen to you, or, you know, the terrible diseases, and, you know, seeing some people who are actually quite young have been inflicted by some horrible things. And like you say, knowing all of that, you want to sort of live life to the full and actually make sure that you're not missing things that you would do just because, you know, just because you can't be bothered, or just because it's, you know, it's a big financial investment or something.
Yeah.
I think that's a big part of why I've chosen to live on a boat, because I didn't want to. A lot of people do it when they retire, but I was worried, obviously, one, that I would get there, and two, that I would have the physical ability to do the boat life, because actually there is a lot of like lugging stuff about, and it can be quite physical at times. But I'm sure that motivation will stay with you for the future anyway, and I'm sure you'll continue to make decisions based on that. What does the future hold for you? Because I know roughly what path you're taking.
Well, that's another fear I have. I may have this like set out plan of what I want to do, but maybe a big fear is, what happens if that just doesn't happen, like, or I don't reach a point where I'm satisfied, you know? What happens if I am kind of unsatisfied with where I'm at in life? That would be a big fear. But my plan would be just to... So our immediate plan would be to get on a grad scheme and then work through that, become a accredited chartered engineer with IMECE, and then from that go on to like better engineering jobs, kind of more well paying, maybe transition into a managing role after, or like a more admin-y kind of higher up in the company. And then obviously start a family. That would be that's an intention. Owning like my own house, things, small things. Well, okay, it's not very small, but
right,
that'll be like the general.
That sounds good.
What about yourself?
Where do I see myself going in the future? I hadn't prepared to be asked that question. Actually,
you're being asked now.
So, I think. Do you know what? I haven't thought about it for a long time. I knew where I wanted to go because I knew I wanted to get the boat, and that was a big like focus for me. But now that I'm here, I'm sort of just enjoying it really, and haven't really thought about what's next, which is probably a good thing because I do want to focus on just making the most of the boat. But I've thought about a few different possibilities. One is that I'm quite motivated to work less. In the sense that I enjoy work, but I also want to have a bit more time to enjoy life as well and have a bit more of a balance.
Yeah.
And I've got a good balance at the moment, but I feel like if I can get my lifestyle simple enough and, you know, cheap enough, but also I can go up in work and get paid more, mm-hmm. I can then afford to sacrifice a day or two here and there to work part time, for instance.
Yeah.
However, there is a big part of me that wants to go and travel around the canal system on the boat and work as a locum, and which essentially means that where there's a shortfall in physiotherapists, you go and fill that gap, and you actually get paid more because you're not on a fixed on a fixed term contract. So. They could just get rid of you whenever they want, essentially. So that's one idea. There is another big part of me that wants to live abroad, though.
Nice.
I'm fed up of being cold, and the boat is probably not a wise move for that. And it's quite cozy most of the time, but I'd love to live somewhere warm.
Definitely agree with that.
I'm not sure how I'd go about doing it, though, because I'd have to find somewhere that's warm that probably speaks English in order to work as a physio, unless I decided to go and do something else.
Yeah, and that'd be quite a big life-changing
definitely choice. I know that in the short term, my next focus is going to be on buying and converting a van when I get to the age of 25. So that's about 2 years from now. I'm going to buy a van for my 25th birthday, convert it, and then
that's pretty
hopefully
cool.
Travel around the UK and Europe with it. That's kind of...
I've seen those YouTube videos. They look actually... It's pretty cool how they do it.
Yeah.
Like they're just properly living out them. Yeah. They're mostly like based in America. But yeah, it would be cool if you did it around here, actually.
Definitely.
That would be really cool.
Definitely. I've been to watch so many of those YouTube videos. It's great fun. But like I say, I've definitely... sort of moved away from thinking about the future and actually just enjoying where I am at the moment, because for a long time I was very much just focused on the next step, like getting through sixth form, getting through A-levels, getting through the first year or two at home so that I could, you know, move out and start settling down and just enjoy life. And I kind of feel like I'm kind of about there, but there's still a lot of learning to do and still a lot of progress that needs to be made.
I do think there's not as much merit in having really long-term goals, because I think so much can change between if you set like a goal in 15, 20 years, there could be so much that changes that you should, maybe it's not a viable option anymore. Obviously, it's cool to, it's probably good to have that goal to aim for if you wanted to, but I think like having those short-term goals, like, oh, when I'm 25, I'm getting my own van, that's good because it's like, you will be able to, it's not like all the roads will disappear and by the time you're 25 or something. I agree.
I think not only can your circumstances change hugely, but I also feel that you can change hugely as a person too.
Definitely.
So as much as I'd like to plan the next 10 years or 20 years and know where I want to go, I feel like by the time I'm, you know, 40, my passions and my drives in life will probably be quite different.
Yep.
So we'll see. But probably the biggest difference in terms of where I'm going compared to yourself is I'm not hugely motivated to settle down and have a family. I've talked about it before with you guys, but there's various reasons behind that. But I'm open to have my mind changed on that as well. Yeah,
my mind could change on that. We could swap positions.
Who knows? Well, yeah, exactly.
I could be driving a van around.
Exactly. Maybe in 2 years' time, you'll be living in a van or something.
Maybe.
Who knows? Who knows?
I did briefly consider it.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely would do it. Especially in like, I would definitely go to America and then do it. That would be sick.
Yeah, America would be great. That would be awesome. They call it boondocking or something.
Oh, really?
Where people just go and they boondock in like car parks,
places
like that. And Walmart's a big one.
Yeah.
I'm definitely fascinated by the whole small space thing.
Yeah.
And I like the.
I'm a bit cautious that I, in those YouTube videos, you kind of see like only the good bits.
Massively.
It could be a bit of dodge, like you're just sleeping in some random car park, you know. Anyone could tell that kind of thing, but
definitely. It's all through like a filter, isn't it? Really,
yeah.
You are only seeing the highlights.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know, if the highlights are pretty good, that's something to go off.
True.
At least. And this is. I was going to try and do a really smooth segue then and say that this has been a highlight, but I got all muddled up. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast though, Shiva.
No worries, mate.
Been great fun, and I think it's gone pretty well having it on the boat. Will shaking his head, he's not happy with it. The acoustics are all wrong, wrong.
Classic Will.
Yeah. But no, thank you for coming on. I'm glad we finally got here at last, and I'm sorry it took so long.
It's all right, we've been busy with our stuff.
And thank you as always, Will, for recording.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Try a bit harder next time.
Yeah. Do a better job.
Yeah. Be better.
But and thank you all for listening. So I hope you have a lovely morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are. And we'll catch you on the next episode.